This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. What's the point in doing an introduction anyway? Because Antonio Rudiger would probably block it. It's Thursday the 18th of April. I'm Amos Murphy.
I'm Adam Booker.
And I'm Ollie Kirsch.
And this is the City Report Podcast.
It's here for Gundogan! It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023 is the City treble year. Champions of England, FA Cup winners, and now, at last, champions of Europe. Manchester City are kings of Europe. Now they have their triple crown.
Well then, guys, what do we make of that then? City out of the Champions League, back-to-back treble dreams over, reigning European champions status gone, well, nearly. Adam, we are, as always, for these reaction shows coming on. I would say just immediately after full-time whistle, but trying to get back from Manchester was a bit of a struggle via public transport. So we're in the early hours of the morning, at least over in these shores. What did you make of it?
Oh, God. I have long been a proponent of this competition is not worth any emotional input from me for many years. I think that all changed when City won the treble last year. But going out to the, 15 times winners on penalties after City dominated most of the game, and we'll get into why they couldn't win the game after dominating it for large stretches. I don't feel much. We were talking off air, and it's something we're going to get into, but of all of the Champions League exits that we've experienced, this has been the most normal and, like, I think almost easy to swallow.
Yeah. Dare I say even apathetic. And I think the part that the way City went out plays a part here. Had there been another Tottenham Hotspur 97th minute VAR crusher and you've had the celebrations and suddenly he comes back, then maybe it would have been a bit different. But Ollie, we'll get into the details, of course, but how are you feeling? I mean, there's been, I'd say it's still in the category of mixed reaction, but like Adam says, I think a lot of people have come out with the conclusion that there's been worse ones that have stung. And I don't know if that speaks volumes about City's performance, about Real Madrid's performance, the fact City have obviously already won the competition. I will say, I think had City in an alternative universe lost to Inter Milan last year, that Lukaku goal goes in, Martinez scores a winner, City still aren't with the Champions League, and then they put up that performance and still go out again this year. I think we're coming on here and we're going, Jesus Christ, when will it end? But the fact City have got one in the bank, I don't know. I'm quite calm.
Yeah, I've not quite made sense just yet of how I feel about it, but I'm certainly, I mean, since Pep, just to run through them, since Pep joined, we went out to Monaco on away goals. We went out to Liverpool. We went out to Tottenham, of course, when we thought we had that Sterling winner late on. We went out disgracefully in the quarterfinals to Lyon. we went out to Chelsea in the final. We went out to Madrid after those two late goals. You know, every time we've been out, it's been in a fashion that has been a serious punch in the gut. And that's putting it nicely, punch in the gut. It's been a punch in the gut, a kick in the face, and a kick in the bollocks to finish it off, right? This one just kind of feels...
That's the real treble, though. That's the real treble.
This one's... Like you said, it's a very normal way to go out. I think the most frustrating thing is that I think once again we've turned up and been the better side. I think similar to...
Okay, let's get into it then, because I think it's hard, at least I found it difficult in the immediate aftermath to really try and make sense of that, of what happened, because is it too simple, Adam, to put it down to say that's the Champions League, that's Real Madrid. You have 33 shots, they have 8, they score 1, we score 1. Similarly, scrappy goals, in fairness. Obviously, Edison makes a wonderful save, Rodrigo puts it in. I think it was Doku with the original shot, Kevin De Bruyne lurking, and some might say his only positive contribution to the evening, but I'm sure we will chat about that as well. But does City have to do more in these games, even though they are the better team, to get the fixture won?
Yeah, I think... Wednesday night, I think they should have done more and could have done more. I think it would be very easy to say, well, it's Real Madrid, it's the Champions League, this is what they do. But I was left pretty frustrated with how City dealt with certain situations. I thought they could have been more clinical, more ruthless when they had the ball in dangerous areas. And I think that's ultimately why they are out. You know, it's not that they're bad at penalties or they didn't have the minerals to step up in a game like this. It was simply, you know, Jack Grealish, Phil Foden, Kevin De Bruyne, Erling Haaland, and Bernardo Silva, when they had the moments to do something, they didn't. They had the chances to have that big moment. Obviously, Kevin De Bruyne has his big moment to level the score, but then he also had his big moment to win it for City a few minutes later and put it, you know, into another town. So it's a bit frustrating that I think the game was there to be won and City couldn't win it. I think last season City probably had a bit more of a cutting edge and a bit more ruthlessness about them.
I wanted to ask, I'll stick with you, Adam, because I don't know all these. I'll come to you in a second, Ollie, but I know in one of the group chats you said something similar. I haven't been keeping up with it, so I'm not sure. But the thing that out of everything for this game that's pissed me off the most was the way City started the game. Because last season we saw, even though they didn't score until the 20th minute, it was bombardment from minute one. However, there was a moment, I think it was in the first 5 minutes, Edison puts his foot on the ball. It's in play. Obviously, Real Madrid aren't going to press him. And he's there for about 40 seconds. Kyle Walker is taking a throw in. He's trying to slow it down. That's obviously an instruction, but it was mental.
Yeah, and Ruben Diaz did it too, right before Edison, where... It was clear that the Madrid press was set up in a way that they weren't going to press the man with the ball. They were going to make the man with the ball make a decision, probably because they want to force the ball to Erling Haaland, who's going to ultimately and inevitably lose his duel and lose the ball, which he did plenty of times again in the second leg. But yeah, I thought it was a total waste of momentum after the 3-3 at the Bernabeu. I thought it was a total waste of the atmosphere on the night. And I kind of thought that after last season, City found the blueprint in these games. You know, City found the recipe that they had been lacking for years under Guardiola, which was leaning into the occasion. Instead of trying to meticulously plan every single moment and every single passage of play, it was lean into the spectacle and go full throttle. And when you go full throttle and you have the better players, turns out you win more games than you lose. And yeah, I thought it was a huge shame to essentially play into Real Madrid's hands, who wanted to break up the tempo and go slow. We saw that all throughout the night, particularly from one man from Birmingham. I thought it played right into Real Madrid's hands, and I thought that was a total shame. And if that was the instruction from Guardiola, I think that's a major blunder.
Yeah. Look, he's got plenty right, and it's easy for us to sit here after the fact and criticise, but there'd been something somewhere that one of the analysts would have picked up or Guardiola would have picked up, and he said, okay, if we do this for 5 minutes, it might work. But football's a very complex game, but at the same time, it's a very simple game. And we saw last year when City are at it, they can go at it. And Real Madrid would have come to the Etihad shaking, and they would have been let off in that first 10 minutes. And obviously they go on and score. And only from that point on, I guess, City's hand was forced, because I don't know about you, but we said it on the preview show, would Pep Guardiola have preferred one of Phil Foden or Kevin De Bruyne to be out injured? Would he have probably preferred Kevin De Bruyne to have not been fully fit to start the game? I think if you ask him that question now, behind closed doors, he says yeah. Because it felt like the two of them were forced into a system that didn't necessarily work. At least that's what I felt in the first half before he switched it and Bernardo played out on the right and Foden came in the middle.
Yeah, as far as City are concerned, tactically, it was a game of two halves. The first half, whatever the fuck we were trying to do, was not working. De Bruyne was, you know, when we were in transition moving up the pitch, De Bruyne was floating out towards the right-hand side anyway. He was sat on, you know, he was stood on Foden's toes a lot of the time, and it just didn't really make sense. I think the second half, the changes that we made worked a lot better. You know, De Bruyne dropped off a little bit, Foden moved central, Bernardo moved up to the right-hand side, and Akanji started playing in that Stones role instead of that kind of flat-back forward with Bernardo in the middle. That worked much better, and is probably how we should have started the game. You know, when we were talking about on the preview show how we should be setting up, I think what we saw in the second half is closer to, you know, what many of us expected or at least fancied City to do. The tempo was a problem. The thing is, I think all these questions and discussions about the first half are almost superseded by the fact that we did get our shit in order and we did get that equalising goal. The majority of the analysis that's going to count is what happened after that first City goal. Why could we not finish it off? And
Well, we'll maybe touch on that in part one, but you just said something interesting there, the fact that that will supersede sort of the first half and stuff. But that set the pattern, didn't it? Because City could, and it's could have, it's would have, it should have, it's all hypotheticals. City could have gone 1-0 down in the first 2 minutes on a counter-attack if they tried to go at them. But it just felt like the entire evening, City were trying to claw themselves back into it, even at 1-1, because they knew that if they went to penalties, that's the level playing field completely.
I disagree. And it's nice, actually, because very often we agree too much, but after a game like that, we need a bit of a different point of view. No, I disagree.
Have the three of us ever had a conversation that wasn't ending in hostilities?
Certainly publicly, Adam. Diplomatic. Yes, not privately. Issues. But in my opinion, the way I see it is that we did get it together, and after we scored that goal,
let me rephrase because I didn't mean that City, because personally I thought the performance even from the first half was great. City dominated the 14-time European champions. What I meant by that was City gave Real Madrid a platform to do what they wanted to do by letting them go up 1-0 inside 12 minutes. And from that point on, they were constantly, even though they were playing fantastically, they were constantly trying to claw themselves back into it. Because equalising on the 76th minute, yeah, that's great, but that's still only 40 minutes out from 90 minutes that Real Madrid have had to play a game level. You know, they led for, what, over an hour?
Fucking hell, he's rephrased it and made me agree with him. Yeah, it did, in a sense, set the pattern, but we did change the pattern maybe a little bit too late. I think there were a few of us that were kind of looking around after Madrid scored saying, maybe that's what we needed. We needed that kick up the arse, and we needed something like that to change the way we'd approach the game. And ultimately it did, maybe a little bit too late. But how we finish the game really is how we should have started. And it's a little bit disappointing that we didn't take the initiative. And the other thing as well, it kind of killed the atmosphere a little bit when that happened. You know, I think the ground was rearing up to do what the Etihad always does on these big European second leg nights, or these big game nights. And it was just kind of, it just whimpered out in the first 5-10 minutes because we saw how we were approaching the game as we kicked off.
You know, weirdly, I think we're looking at these two games, the first and the second leg, in kind of different lights. But actually, I think they were almost the exact same game. It's just that there was a bundle of wonder goals in the first leg. You know, we were talking about the expected goals from the first leg, and it was like under two for the whole game, yet there were 6 goals scored. And I think if you take out, you know, the Valverde, Gvardiol, and Phil Foden stunners and the Bernardo Silva, you know, catching the keeper out, these games probably look really similar because I don't remember City creating all that much outside of those wonder goals in Madrid. So, you know, all of the issues that led to this game getting all the way to penalties, which I think once we got there, everyone kind of knew the outcome. I think those issues have, you know, they lasted over 210 minutes, not, you know, not 90 or 120 Wednesday night.
What changed then second half, Adam, and why did it come too late?
I don't know that anything changed necessarily. Obviously, as Ollie pointed out, Foden got pushed into the middle and Bernardo went out wide, and maybe that gave City a little bit more of a cutting edge centrally. But I think that any team that has their back up against the wall with Erling Haaland, Kevin De Bruyne, Phil Foden, and Jeremy Doku, who came on and was excellent, players like that running at you for 70 minutes, eventually there's going to be a slip or a moment. And that moment was, you know, the deflected ball landing perfectly at Kevin De Bruyne's feet and he lashed it into the roof of the net. I don't necessarily think anything changed. And I think you see that in the way that Real Madrid didn't change anything once City equalized, because I think they were fully comfortable, even with that goal going in. They were totally comfortable saying, yeah, go on, we'll do this for another 40 minutes. Doesn't matter to us. So truthfully, I don't think really anything changed. We, you know, we can talk about the Jeremy Doku substitution, and that changed things because he had a bit, Carvajal had a bit tougher time with Doku than he did Grealish. But I don't think City necessarily needed to change anything, and neither did Real Madrid. And that's why we end up in a stalemate and we end up going to penalties, because I think both teams were relatively comfortable with the state of the game. It's just that City couldn't find the goal.
Yeah, which with my frustration goes back to the first 10 minutes and the way they've sort of laid out the cards, and suddenly, you know, like I said, you're sort of chasing after the game a little bit. Who knows if it could have been different? Who knows? City scored early at the Bernabeu and suddenly they were 2-1 down within 15 minutes. It could have been similar. It could have been not. Okay, that'll do for part one. We'll delve into more of the spicy topics, I guess, in part two. So stay exactly where you are.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome back to the City Report podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. Now, we couldn't go through this episode without a little bit of sour grapes, I guess. Ollie, do you want to go with the performance of the Spanish Crystal Palace, or would you like to go with our English friend Jude Bellingham? Because look, we can delve into a little bit of bitterness, because fuck me, Real Madrid, that was, they won, fair enough, but it was still a little bit embarrassing.
It's embarrassing if you compare what you would expect a club of their stature to play
like
in the Champions
League. I will make the point, it is, yeah, that is exactly what
versus how they actually played. But ultimately, in a sense, it's kind of out of their hands, because I'm going to say it again, and this might sound ridiculous because they've just knocked us out, but Manchester City are a far superior side to Real Madrid. We mauled them last season. We pretty much had the beating of them when they did knock us out a couple of years ago with those late goals. And
for sure,
I think today, again, once we got going and we got out of first gear tonight, again, we ran them ragged. City are a better side. So look, Madrid were pragmatic, right? They did what they had to do. They did it well. Would I be pissed off as a Madrid fan? The only difference is a couple of penalties. If Madrid go out tonight, then those fans are fucking furious at what they've seen. Mm. You know, they've come to the Etihad and they've come out like a team that is almost wide-eyed at all these Manchester City stars in front of them running around and playing them off the park. But if they win, I've already seen some outrageous takes saying it was an incredible defensive performance. They gave up the second most shots in Champions League last 10 years or something. No,
it just wasn't.
I'm not going to criticise them for the performance. I think everyone's just got to kind of look at this with a bit of a level head here. It's not an Ancelotti masterclass. It's not a Guardiola masterclass. It's not a Madrid embarrassment per se.
Mm.
I think it's just ultimately where these two sides are quality-wise. And it certainly wasn't anything to do with Real Madrid's Champions League aura tonight. We had that a couple of years ago at the Bernabeu. That was the Madrid Champions League typical aura. Tonight was just one of those football games where shit happens. De Bruyne misses from 6 yards. Foden kicks an air ball when the ball's being zipped into him, and they go and win on penalties. But this is going back to what we said at the beginning of the very top of the show, right? It doesn't sting because this is a very normal way to lose a game of football. You've got one better side, you've got one that just sticks it out, rides the luck a little bit, and they get a penalty shootout, and then it's anyone's game. It kind of is what it is. But Madrid, if you are a Real Madrid fan, maybe wonder why you are incapable of playing football against Manchester City, but I don't think they'll be care. They'll care. They'll be out celebrating in Manchester tonight and in Madrid.
I have to disagree here. I know this is the I know this is the sour grapes hour, this I think you can chalk it up to the Real Madrid Champions League. One might call it an aura. We might call it a curse, because this is what Real Madrid do. They can play 50 different ways. They can take a game to you. We see it all the time in La Liga. We see it in other Champions League games. They can sit back and hit you on the counter. They can sit in and not even try and counter and just roll around for 90 minutes and take you to pens. They have a way to win in every situation. And I think City...
That's not aura, mate. That's just shithousing, because we've never seen them come out and play against us.
But that's how you win knockout competitions.
You have your different chameleon... And you different.
That's how you win. That's why City have won so few knockout competitions under Pep Guardiola. I mean, the FA Cup and League Cup, obviously, but it's a bit different than the Champions League, because they for a while had one way to play, and if that way didn't work, they were fucked. And that's not the case anymore, luckily for City, and so they've been able to have a bit more success. But Real Madrid have become masters of winning 10 different types of games.
Leopard never changes its stripes.
But it's a shame Jude Bellingham behaves like that, because he's a really talented footballer.
Yeah, I completely agree. I don't really have much to say about it. I mean, that was clearly the plan. And they're whiny. They complain a lot, but it worked. They got the calls they wanted, and they
eyebrow goes up, Brummy goes down.
Yes, exactly.
yeah, that's a did bit I hear a, the most.
Did I hear a "You're just a soft Southern bastard" chant from the South Stand at one point?
Soft Brummy bastard.
Soft Brummy bastard.
Brummy bastard. Yeah. We all know where England's second city really is. Okay. That's sour grape hour done. Adam Erling Haaland, he's taking stick. I'm not someone who's going to give him stick, because I think that game, as we've just spent the last maybe 10 minutes or so discussing, I'm not quite sure what else he can do apart from turn into fucking Superman and wrestle Rudiger off the face of the earth. I don't know. For me, the deficiencies came from behind him, but I know other people have different stuff to say on him.
I think 90% of Erling Haaland's failings in the past... Well, in the calendar year 2024, I think he has 6 goals against Luton and 0 goals against every other team that we've played. I think most of those deficiencies have come from behind him and an inability to get him the ball in the correct situations to maximize his talents. However, in these two legs, there was plenty of times where he could have used his physicality and won duels. He could have. And... my disappointment is not that he didn't score a hat trick. My disappointment is not that he missed a few chances. My disappointment's not that he couldn't get on the end of many chances. It's that when he could have been useful playing out from the back and, you know, throwing a shoulder into somebody, winning the ball, holding it up and giving it on, which we've seen him do. It's not that he doesn't have that in his arsenal. We have seen him do that plenty of times. He couldn't do it.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I guess this is the different perspectives of it, because whenever I, and Ollie, you can come in and I suppose you can have the casting vote, but whenever I looked at Haaland, he was in a duel. He was in a couple of duels and he was having his shirt trying to be taken off him and he was giving it back and he was trying to make the runs, but he was just being held. This, it's not necessarily criticism of the referee, because I guess it's totally legal what Rudiger and what Nacho were doing, but it's one of them where if the referee turns around and they see the defender holding a shrug of Haaland's shirt and he's trying to turn, he's running for own goal, it's a red card. I don't know, Ollie, if Haaland, apart from be on his day and have a world-class performance, if we're just asking for a bang average sort of, do you sort of occupy the defenders, I guess. I'm not quite sure he could have done more. For me, it goes back to Bernardo Silva, it goes back to Kevin De Bruyne, it goes back to Phil Foden, even Jack Grealish behind him trying to do something with the very little, admittedly, space that existed.
Haaland's in an unfortunate spot right now. Firstly, because the team hasn't clicked this season like it did last season. Mm. So the games, you know, as you said, he's not really scored against any opponents in 2024 except Luton. Is that right? Since the turn of the year,
just no. Luton? Well, he scored against Everton. He got two against Everton in the game where City won 2-0.
Booker's thumb's going up and down.
He's doing the Carlo Ancelotti.
Look, either way, we don't need to go game by game here. He's not been in the monstrous goal scoring.
Two goals against Everton, 10th of February, 2024.
He's not been in the monstrous goal-scoring form that we expect of him, nor that we were treated to last season. There are always a couple of reasons for that. One, games like, or ties like Madrid, where, frankly, he's just marked out the game. Two, three, four players sat around him at all times, roughing him up. The other thing is, perhaps in the other games, where we've just not quite clicked with the build-up play and putting the ball where it needs to be for Haaland's finish, half of that isn't his fault. The other half that is his fault is the few chances he is getting. What historically has made him so fucking good is that he will take those chances. You think about, I think it was two headers tonight, one that just kind of weakly drifted over the bar and one he did hit the bar. And there's been half chances like that over the course of the last few weeks or months that he hasn't put away. The other thing, I just want to point a finger at fans broadly as well, and I've been guilty of this in a sense. If we want to play a system that incorporates Erling Haaland, you have to expect, or we have to expect, that there are going to be games where if the team behind him isn't clicking, he's going to look pretty damn useless. That's the nature of the beast here. If we want the pleasure of having an Erling Haaland up top, you've got to take the good with the bad and the bad with the good.
Yeah.
This isn't an Aguero. This isn't an Alvarez. This isn't a Phil Foden false nine, a Bernardo Silva false nine, where they might not score, but you can say, look how good they were with the link-up play. They dropped deep so beautifully. They opened the space up for the wingers. There is one aspect to this man's game that is important. Yes, he can add a little bit more to his game. He'll get there. But the most important thing about having an out-and-out nine is that they score goals. If they are not scoring goals, either because they're not taking all the chances, or more commonly, they're not having the chances created for them, that's we've just got to take that. So what I would say is, if you are questioning Erling Haaland, is it Erling Haaland you're questioning? Or is it your commitment to having a system where we do have a pure number nine? We just need to have a little think about that, because we've seen so many different systems and strikers and styles, you know, Jesus, Aguero, Alvarez, Haaland, over the last few years, plus the false nines in Bernardo, in De Bruyne, in Foden. What is it you want? All of those systems have a letdown. You play the false nine, the ball goes whizzing across the six-yard box, there's nobody there. That's the nature of the beast. You want to play a true nine, but you don't feel like they're dropping back and getting involved in play enough. That's the nature of the beast. There's always something has to always give. I'm not completely absolving Haaland of blame. He has things he needs to improve. He needs to be taking those half chances, because that's what makes him so good. But at the same time, fans, we've all just got to have a little think about the fact that if you want a pure nine, something somewhere has to give, and that is a player that has an all-round game.
I fully agree with Ollie. I think what was frustrating specifically about this game Wednesday night was the fact that once he came off, it felt like that's when the chances that would have been useful to have him on the pitch started to get created.
Was one immediately, wasn't there?
Yeah, Doku whizzed one across the box. And the one that fell to Foden that he whiffed, that would have been great if it was Erling Haaland. That felt like the false nine era all over again. It's like, oh, look at these chances we're creating. You just stick a big dumb idiot in there and he's going to tap him in. And now the big dumb idiot, we have him, and we didn't have him in that moment.
Yeah, on Haaland, I think he isn't, this is going to sound bonkers, but he wasn't bought for the games like this, because we saw City put, even though they didn't this evening, granted, but we saw City put four past Real Madrid without Erling Haaland in 2021, 22. Like, you know, City can score goals. It's the games around him, where Southampton at home, where you draw in and then suddenly Erling Haaland pops up. Or, you know, that Everton game we were just speaking about then, City wouldn't have won that game in 21-22. And if they go on to win the Premier League title this year, that's two goals he's got at home against a team who sat similarly deep to Real Madrid. That has helped sort of City go on and earn 3 points. I just wonder if Guardiola can get to a point where he doesn't necessarily feel like he has to play Haaland 24/7 in the footballing sense, because it does feel like he can be a bit more of an impact player in certain fixtures. Not necessarily saying this is one of them, but it feels like he's maybe spent a little bit and he's maybe mentally exhausted as well as physically. Adam, do we read too much into the penalty shootout? I mean, I guess Bernardo Silva had a reason for what he did, but
you know,
it'll be one of life's mysteries.
I was thinking this morning, because I was doing some pre-match writing about the Arsenal game at work, and I was comparing where they are now to the early days of the Pep Guardiola era, in which City were great domestically, and then they would get to the big stage in Europe, and you could feel their lack of experience. You could feel that they didn't have the nous and the know-how to handle situations. And I was thinking, oh, it's great now that City have gotten over that, and they have the experience, and they've come through all of these situations. But then I thought about it, and I thought, well, actually, there's one situation they haven't come through, and that's penalty shootouts. I mean, what, we had one in the Super Cup this year.
Yeah.
Have we had one in the Champions League in the Pep era?
No, that was the first ever one. That was the first ever one.
There you go. So it's something these players have never dealt with, you know? And all I was thinking was, we shouldn't have sold Joe Hart.
Which, I guess, Edison, he did save it, didn't he, the Modric one? I've not imagined that. Yeah, he did, which is a decent save. I don't think he could have done much about the other ones. It's similarly to Haaland, Edison isn't the goalkeeper who's going to get you saves from a penalty shootout. I wonder if at any point Guardiola considered bringing Ortega on, but that's not really kind of his style. Saying that, we saw Edison take a penalty. That, I think, Ollie, will always feel like a fever dream, watching Edison take a penalty as City are about to crash out of the Champions League.
Do you know what? I was just going to talk about that, but I am looking through Manchester City's full cup history here. That's our first ever penalty shootout in the Champions League. Mm-hmm. The FA Cup, going back to 1896, a few years in between, and then
that was a good year.
Up to 1932, Manchester City have never finished a cup run in the FA Cup with penalties. That is unbelievable. Obviously, we have had penalty shootouts, but we've never
had... turned into proper 2 a.m. kitchen chat.
Yeah, sorry. Okay. Edison...
But during lockdown, when we were all locked away, there was plenty of shootouts. I mean, that makes you think.
Makes you think, like the weather in Dubai right now really makes you think. Thanks, Matt Letizia. Anyway, so no, I actually did that. That was, I had a special mention just to end the episode on a good note. If you, regardless of the result, can't look back on the fact that Edison has just stepped up to take the fifth and potentially deciding penalty in a Champions League quarterfinal second leg against Real Madrid, if you can't think about that and smile, there's something wrong with you. That was unbelievable. And the way he took it as well.
I know, the way he took it.
Oh, when he was stepping up, I was thinking, right, the mad bastard's just going to blast this at 100 miles an hour and hope it goes somewhere, somewhere within the frame of the goal. He didn't. He placed it like Erling fucking Haaland places his penalties. It was unbelievable. Yeah. Beautiful penalty. So special mention for that. That's actually a bit of a massive bright spot tonight. And if Erling Haaland's ever not on the pitch and we've got penalties to take, I would not be against Ederson stepping up and taking it.
Speaking of the penalty shootout, I just want to give a special shout out to whoever it was that held on to the ball in the family stand and made Bernardo Silva sit and wait to take a pen. You are directly to blame for sitting getting knocked out of the Champions League.
There is nobody
is to blame but you.
There is actually a correlation statistically. I saw this a couple of years ago that
the longer
it takes for a player to take a pen after they've stepped up, the more time that elapses between stepping up and taking the pen, the more likely they are not to score the penalty. So
it's just another reminder that the family stand should actually be moved to the new arena and they can watch the game on the big screen in the arena.
Family stand.
Those opinions are not the opinion of the City Report podcast. They are solely Adam Booker's opinion. There are plenty of lovely people in the family stand.
However, the one that did hold the ball on, you are not one of those lovely people.
Yeah, fuck you, as we like to say. Right, okay, I think we've done enough there. It's gone 1 a.m. here in great old Manchesterinium. Ollie, thank you.
Thank you.
Adam, thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm too tired for this shit. Listeners, thank you. Until next time, it's been a pleasure. We'll see you later.
Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end of season running with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial running, and just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.